Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with the leadership and management theme. I'm Juliette Campasi, Learning Solutions Project Executive at the Institute, and in this podcast, we will be looking at news from the week beginning 17th of June. Joining me to analyse these stories is Phil James, Chief Executive at the Institute. Our first story is taken from an 11th of June report from the Parliamentary Women and Equalities Committee that says changes in the law are needed to protect employees from the misuse of non-disclosure agreements. The report states, "It is completely unacceptable that allegations of unlawful discrimination and harassment in the workplace are routinely covered up by employers with legally drafted NDAs. It is clear that in some cases, allegations of unlawful discrimination are not investigated properly or at all by employers, and that the substantial imbalance of power between employers and employees mean that employees can feel they have little choice but to reach a settlement that prohibits them speaking out." The report stresses that any new laws should strengthen corporate governance rules to require employers to meet their responsibilities to protect staff from discrimination and harassment, and require named senior managers at board level or similar to oversee anti-discrimination and harassment policies and procedures, and monitor how NDAs are used in cases with discrimination and harassment dimensions. Phil, with any potential changes in the law yet to take place, how should leaders react to the report in the meantime?
Well, clearly the sort of discrimination and harassment that's talked about in these allegations is totally unacceptable, and it's a big problem, not in the interests of the individual or the long-term interests of the company, or indeed the public interests that these sorts of things are covered over with NDAs or with anything else for that matter. But I think we have to look at what we're assuming here. There's a big assumption that NDAs are there to cover up poor behaviour, and there aren't other ways for these things to be covered up. We have to accept, I think, that bad behaviour happens in companies, in all sorts of organisations. It does happen. It is covered up, it's colluded with, whether or not NDAs exist to sort of deal with them and mop them up afterwards. But the question about banning NDAs, I think, is just not going to sort out the root problem here. Bad behaviour will continue to happen, whether or not there are NDAs in place to cover up. So I think leaders should think carefully about how to respond sensitively but positively to address such issues where there's discrimination and poor behaviour happening. It's about trying to drive and build and create and co-create the right culture in our organisations. So eventually there is nothing to cover up by NDAs or by any other means. The focus should be on cultures. The focus should be on the sorts of policies and practices that are there to promote greater inclusion, promote better behaviour, to raise expectations around behaviour in our organisations, to fight discrimination and to protect those who find themselves a victim of harassment. NDAs do have their uses, I think. They're used where there is commercial sensitivity, you know, where people leave organisations and there's a question of confidentiality and so on for commercial means. And when used well, they can be of benefit to the organisation but also to the employee themselves and the leaving employee. So I think where the problem has to be tackled is in its root cause, but this takes courage, it takes self-reflection. It takes a self-effacing approach by those in positions of leadership and influence. You know, what are you going to stand up for as a leader? What are your values, and how do you stop the poor behaviour happening in the first place? That's where our focus should be, and not just on NDAs.
Thank you, Phil. Our second story looks at the US clothing brand American Eagle, which has attracted favourable coverage for a recent initiative designed to shrink the distance between the company and some of its most loyal customers. The brand has already established a strong track record on social issues, and the article in Fast Company says much of the firm's brand activism has come out of carefully studying its customers, who are currently Gen Z teens. But now the brand has just created a new way to more formally incorporate the perspectives of young people into its corporate decision-making by launching a council consisting of 9 young people between the ages of 16 to their early 20s. The council meets at intervals time to coincide with educational holidays to come up with ideas for things the company can do to enhance its appeal with its customer base. As a result of the council's initial discussions, American Eagle has created an in-store donations effort to help restore Californian forests damaged by recent wildfires, hatched a tree planting scheme in partnership with an ecological agency and launched a denim recycling program that has already gathered up to 11,000 pairs of discarded jeans. My question for you, Phil, is what can other leaders learn from the trust that American Eagle has invested in its Gen Z Council and how it takes the members' ideas seriously?
This is a really new and interesting take on the focus group, isn't it? In the UK, we tend to think of focus groups as, in terms of their use for the benefit of political parties, say, to test the mood of a certain portion of the public and to create policies and so on that are for the benefit of political parties. But this sounds to me like a focus group. And organisations like the Institute of Leadership Management, in fact, do this sort of thing all the time with members and people with interesting things to say about leadership management so that we're better informed. In terms of the American Eagle approach, this sounds to me like it's a consultative rather than exploitative approach. It'd be really interesting to see how American Eagle go around developing that relationship with its council of young people so that the expectations are managed and the relationship is built. So this is about not handing over control per se of the organization's brand. You know, it could be argued that you're not in control of your brand anyway, but the brand of American Eagle and any other organization is really down to the perceptions and experiences of different individuals as they come on into contact with the organization and its products and services on a regular basis. But this is about buy-in, I think, and it's hopefully at least a really genuine attempt to listen and being inclusive. But let's be clear, there's a very, very strong business reason for doing this. American Eagle, I'm sure, are very switched on in terms of the commercial benefits of listening to the younger demographic. But actually, here's something for you to think about. It's also a really good invitation to how we adopt a conciliatory or collaborative and participative leadership style and open ourselves up to new ideas, new thinking, new experiences. And for me, an interesting takeaway might be to take the American Eagle story as a cue and think about really interesting things that you could do at a personal level. For example, reverse mentoring and, you know, listening and inviting views and opinions and expertise from young people to help inform yourself about how the world is changing and about the views of new generations of people coming forward.
Thank you, Phil. For our third story, I'm joined by Rod Jones and Kate Cooper, who are discussing the challenges of open plan offices. Rod, over to you.
Thank you, Juliet. Our final story is taken from a new survey by Nespresso Professional, reported in this week's Insight, that suggests that changing office environments and flexible working practices are not improving employees' relationships with co-workers or their creativity and output. Many companies are using contemporary technology, office layouts and flexible working as tools for recruitment and retention, yet hot desking, for example, does not seem to be entirely effective, with two-thirds of those who do it saying they come in early to secure their favourite workspace. The report concludes that, while opinions may be divided on the design and culture of modern workplaces, it is clear that getting the balance right is critical to employee well-being, and employers should work proactively with their staff to ensure that any solutions are designed to nurture meaningful relationships in spite of evolving work practices. Kate, is it fair to say that there is no easy solution to how we should organise our office space to ensure such meaningful relationships?
You're right, Rod. There isn't an ideal answer to how we organise our office space. There are benefits in terms of privacy and less distraction, individual offices, and there, of course, there are advantages of better sense of what's going on, being able to pick up on conversations that you might not have heard about in open plan offices. One solution is to set ground rules, especially in open plan offices. We did some research on this some years ago, and it's so easy to irritate and annoy your co-workers by being thoughtless. For example, eating smelly food at your desk, people being noisy and playing instead of doing their work. Of course, we go to work to enjoy it, and there will be moments of, as our banter report illustrated, where you're engaging socially, you're not engaging about the work, and that's an important aspect of work for many people. But how that is managed and how we minimise the disruption is really important. And the only way you can really get a shared understanding about what's acceptable and what's not is to have an open conversation about it and draw up together together what you consider to be reasonable rules of engagement and being very clear about them.
Thank you both. And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again to Phil and Kate for their insights on these stories.